For the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. A cover story this week, Cry for Appeal. The Certificate of Need process in North Carolina allows healthcare organizations to appeal regulatory decisions, often delaying expansions and construction of new healthcare facilities in a growing region. Before the cover story, we'll read the Biz section. Biz is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Raleigh Architect designs D-Day Memorial. A Raleigh architect is the driving force behind a dramatic new memorial on the beaches of Normandy that honors some of D-Day's bravest men. Matt Pearson designed the new memorial to the U.S. Naval Combat Demolition Units who arrived on the beach as part of the first wave on June 6, 1944. Their role was to clear a path through the German obstacles shortly before Higgins' boats loaded with infantry arrived. Pearson, whose grandfather was at Utah Beach on D-Day and whose father served in the U.S. Navy, previously designed a monument to Navy SEALs in Virginia Beach, Virginia. That led the National Navy SEAL Museum in Florida to reach out about a monument in France for the forerunners of today's SEALs. Pearson says some SEAL leaders had visited Normandy and returned determined to have their own memorial. They were like, "There's nothing here that says anything that we did," he says, "so that story was incredibly appealing to me." Pearson's design is near the beach and close to the American Cemetery. It's also near a German gun emplacement. Widerstandsnest 65 that raked Omaha Beach with shells when the Americans landed. Rather than a simple monument similar to what is elsewhere in Normandy, Pearson designed a park-like exhibit that includes plaques, reliefs, and explanations of that day's events. Pearson says the result has been a hit so far. The memorial dedication was May 30th. On June 6th, President Joe Biden and French President Emmanuel Macron will be at Normandy and may visit the new memorial. Every architect's dream is to do a monument, but in particular a monument of incredible significance, Pearson says. The actions and valor and selfless heroic deeds on that day are worthy of being recognized. Raleigh Ironworks adds new retailers with more to come. With the addition of a brewery and new eatertainment concept, the atmosphere is getting lively at one of Raleigh's newest developments. Raleigh Ironworks, the mixed-use redevelopment off Atlantic Avenue led by Grub Ventures and Jamestown, was popping on a recent Friday night as people flocked to see the new Ponysaurus brewing location, as well as Jaguar Bolera, a concept offering games, food, and drinks. Along with East Cut Sandwich Bar and the wildly popular Andy's Ice Cream, Ironworks is starting to gain the vibe its developers had hoped for. The development also includes the Forge Apartments. Ironworks is just part of the transformation happening in that part of Midtown Raleigh. Next door, Grub Ventures is planning the Salvage Yard, another adaptive reuse project. Plans call for a music hall, a brewery, a new location for a Triangle Rock Club, and Jaguar Bolera's Pickleball Bar. Pro Golf event returns to RCC. Professional golf is back in the Triangle this weekend when the UNC Health Championship runs through June 2nd. Roy Williams, the longtime coach at UNC Chapel Hill, will serve as honorary chairman on what serves as a key stop on the Corn Ferry Tour. The local event, now held at Raleigh Country Club, has included some rising golf stars from the local area in the past, including Chesson Hadley, Akshay Bhatia, and the late Grayson Murray. Among the beneficiaries of the tournament are the NC Children's Hospital and a new children's hospital in the planning stages. More than 10,000 fans attended the tournament last year. Also in golf news, tough task to be under par at Pinehurst No. 2. You've got to be a pretty darn good golfer in order to hit under par at Pinehurst No. 2, the home of the upcoming 2024 U.S. Open Golf Championship. In fact, Through three U.S. Opens at Pinehurst, only four golfers have finished under par. In 1999, the first year of the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, American golfer Payne Stewart finished one shot under par and won the championship by doing so. He edged out legendary golfer Phil Mickelson, who finished the tournament at even par. In 2005, no golfers finished under par. Australian golfer Michael Campbell finished the tournament even par, which was enough to win him the championship that year. And in 2014, three golfers finished under par. American golfers Eric Compton and Ricky Fowler each shot one under, but that wasn't enough as German golfer Martin Kamer put up a historic performance, finishing the U.S. Open nine strokes under par. Breaking bread on new space. La Farm Bakery celebrated the opening of its new development pop-up, new downtown pop-up with a ceremonial bread breaking on May 22nd. Baker Lionel Vatinay, co-owner Missy Vatinay, and COO Omar Gay have opened at 122 Glenwood Avenue in Loden Development's Row at Glenwood Project and will remain until the end of the year with the option of extending the lease afterward. In addition, La Farm Bakery will open another location later this summer at the Creekside Crossing Shopping Center in North Raleigh later this summer. The business opened its first bakery in 1999 and has since expanded throughout the Triangle. Governor Cooper goes to France to strengthen trade relationship. Governor Roy Cooper went to France and hopes to bring jobs back to North Carolina. Cooper met with business leaders in France as part of an economic development trip in May. They include leaders from Schneider Electric. And top of mind was investment opportunities and job creation in North Carolina. More than 1,700 foreign companies have chosen North Carolina for their operations. Together, they support 303,600 jobs. Germany is the second largest source of foreign direct investment in North Carolina behind Japan, with Switzerland and France the fifth and 12th largest, respectively. Our cover story this week, Playing the Long Game, was written by Zach Ezone. North Carolina's process for deciding on future health care projects can be lengthy and costly. In 2021, UNC Health unveiled plans to build a 40-bed hospital in Research Triangle Park. After state regulators approved the plans, UNC Health anticipated investing around $252 million in building a hospital near the intersection of Highways 54 and 147. But 3 years later, the project is entangled in a lengthy appeal process and has not advanced beyond planning documents. And it's not just hospital beds that get caught up in North Carolina's arduous process for awarding certificates of need, CON, for healthcare facilities. The development of operating rooms at outpatient surgery centers or medical equipment such as MRI scanners can be delayed for years by appeals. The reason is that millions of dollars are at stake. For example, UNC Health initially projected the RTP hospital would yield total net revenue of about $77.6 million by its third full year of operations. UNC's proposal has been opposed by Duke Health, which has its own ideas about how to serve the growing population in that part of the triangle. The lengthy process is a byproduct of the Certificate of Need law, where North Carolina remains among two-thirds of states with some version of this in place. Each year, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services publishes a state medical facilities plan, projecting needs for various facilities and services. Healthcare providers then file applications outlining their vision for a project, like a new hospital or how they would utilize a new MRI scanner. DHHS regulators then select the projects to issue a certificate of need. But this decision can be appealed by rivals, and in North Carolina, the cost of filing an appeal is only a $50,000 deposit. This can be a small investment compared to the millions of dollars that are at stake. Appeals first go to the North Carolina Office of Administrative Hearings and can reach the state's Court of Appeals and even the North Carolina Supreme Court. But healthcare organizations of all sizes can get caught up in the process, both as the organization filing the appeal and as the one whose project has been appealed. It's delaying patient care even more, Emerge Ortho CEO Allison Farmer says. We're going to see years later that a service is offered in a location where there would be need, and that's unfortunate for the patients that are waiting for appointments and waiting for care. Raleigh Neurosurgical Clinic started in 1954, and for most of its existence, the physician-owned practice worked with hospital partners and other surgery centers for space to perform procedures. But looking to have more control over its services in an increasingly competitive environment, the clinic decided to develop its own surgery center with operating and procedure rooms. It was about being able to control the entire patient experience, CEO Jacob Rodman says, everything from cost to nursing care to equipment used, it's the ability to determine every step along the way. The group, through an entity called Wake Spine and Specialty Surgery Center, LLC, in January 2020, received CON approval from state regulators for the project with a capital expenditure of about $5.7 million. This was a competitive process. Duke Health and UNC Health both filed their own proposals, delaying when Raleigh Neurosurgical Clinic could begin. But the dispute happened early in the pandemic. This timing ultimately worked in the favor of the clinic as the hospital systems faced larger issues. Instead of going through this, dragging this out, spending a bunch of money, everybody had more important things to focus on, Rodman says. The dispute was settled in mediation in June of 2020. Raleigh Neurosurgical Clinic agreed that it would not file another CON application for 2 years. In our minds, we're like, the quicker we can get construction going and get this place open, the better, Rodman says. Ultimately, it was going to take us 2 years to get the center up and running anyway, so I didn't feel like we were really giving up a lot. But some disputes last years, even over a single MRI. State planning documents in 2021 determined that Wake County needed one additional MRI scanner. Both Duke Health and Pinnacle Health Services filed applications for multi-million dollar projects. Pinnacle, which does business as Cardinal Points Imaging of the Carolinas, proposed adding an MRI to its existing imaging diagnostic center in Wake Forest and a project costing about $1.5 million. Duke Health proposed a new diagnostic center at its Raleigh Hospital campus for roughly $4.9 million. State regulators approved Duke Health's application in September 2021. Pinnacle, owned and operated by Outpatient Imaging Affiliates, appealed, sending the dispute to the North Carolina Office of Administrative Hearings. In July 2022, Administrative Law Judge Melissa Owens Lassiter overruled DHHS and awarded the MRI to Pinnacle. Lassiter found that the DHHS conclusion to be erroneous. Duke Health and the DHHS both contested Lassiter's decision, sending the dispute to the North Carolina Court of Appeals. The court affirmed Lassiter's decision in September. Duke Health and the DHHS filed appeal notices with the North Carolina Supreme Court. So millions of dollars in potential revenue remain at stake, and no MRI has been launched. Pinnacle, in its 2021 CON application, estimated that by the third full year of operation, the project would generate about $2.3 million in total net revenue. Duke Health, meanwhile, estimated its third-year revenue at $2.32 million. Raleigh Radiology, a growing practice with locations throughout the Triangle, went through a similar experience in trying to acquire an MRI scanner for a center in Cary. State regulators in April 2020 approved the practice's application, but it was later appealed by Duke Health and by Wake Radiology, a joint venture with UNC Health. Administrative Law Judge Michael Byrne upheld the DHHS's decision to award the CON to Raleigh Radiology, leading Wake Radiology to appeal further to the NC Court of Appeals. That court affirmed Byrne's decision, and regulators issued Raleigh Radiology its CON for the project in October. The scanner is set to be operational in July, more than 4 years after its initial approval. But Dr. Satish Mathan, president and managing partner of Raleigh Radiology, says this delay is part of the process. The organization has also been on the other side of appeals. For instance, Raleigh Radiology in 2016 appealed regulators' decision to approve an application by Duke Health to develop a new MRI scanner in Wake County. An administrative law judge ruled in Raleigh Radiology's favor, but the Court of Appeals sided with the regulator's initial decision to award the CON to Duke Health. Pursuing an appeal ultimately comes down to whether an organization believes they have the superior application, Mathan says, and he sees benefits to patients and providers from North Carolina's strenuous process. We have very high-quality health care in our area, and that partly is because an organization really has to show commitment to want to do it, he says. That's probably the benefit of the process. You have to be really committed to wanting to deliver services to the community to be willing to go through this process. One of the many problems with North Carolina's CON process is how easily projects can be appealed with little downside, says Noah Hufstetler, a healthcare attorney at Nelson Mullins in Raleigh. Healthcare organizations are required to file an appeal within 30 days of the DHHS decision, and a bond of up to $50,000 to appeal is a small investment in the context of multi-million dollar impact, Hufstetler says. The bond may be awarded to the certificate of need holder if the appeal is found to be frivolous, but that can be a difficult bar to reach. I don't know many incidents in which the bond has actually been forfeited, Hufstetler says. It's very hard to get. And even if you get it, it's minuscule compared to the damage that could be done. To appeal a project beyond the Office of Administrative Hearings requires an organization to deposit another bond between $5,000 and $50,000, although the applicant who received the CON approval can ask the court to set a higher bond of up to $300,000 to cover costs and damages. CON law can vary significantly across different states. In Georgia, for instance, filing an appeal requires payment of only a $7,500 fee. However, unlike North Carolina, these appeals are heard by a Certificate of Need panel rather than a quasi-judicial agency like the Office of Administrative Hearings. A group of legislators in Kentucky earlier this year attempted to overhaul that state's CON law. The bill sponsors in February filed legislation, House Bill 204, that would have essentially ended the appeal process altogether. The bill, which was shot down by a Kentucky House committee, would have allowed only the applicant of a project and not its opponents to appeal the state's decision on their proposal. The appeal process in South Carolina, which last year repealed most of its CON law, requires organizations to request a contested care hearing with the state's administrative law court. After that, appealing the case to the state Supreme Court requires an organization to deposit a bond equal to 5% of the total cost of the project, with a minimum set at $100,000 and a maximum of $1.5 million. In North Carolina, only a small percentage of the projects that DHHS reviews are appealed, says Don Carter, founder and senior partner of Ascendient Healthcare Advisors. And this percentage is likely to get smaller in the future in some parts of North Carolina with upcoming changes to the CON law. The appeals are typically on competitive projects, meaning more than one healthcare organization has filed an application. This typically includes acute care beds and operating rooms, and then medical equipment like MRI scanners and linear accelerators, says Karen Sandlin, president of the healthcare advisory firm Clarity Strategic Services. Appeals can also occur on non-competitive projects in highly competitive markets. This means an organization would file an appeal contesting to some part of the DHHS decision without submitting their own project. There are specific regulations regarding the grounds for filing an appeal, one of which is the argument that the DHHS acted arbitrarily or capriciously, Carter says, but administrative law judges typically defer to the state agency's ability to apply the law and regulations as they see fit. The chance of winning an appeal has never been high, Carter says, but I think they were higher earlier in my career than they are today. I would say it's not very common to have an appeal be successful. A successful appeal involves demonstrating agency error and that the NDHHS substantially prejudiced the rights of the organization who lost the CON bid, Sandlin says, but this is a term without a clear meaning. In a case involving Mission Hospital in Asheville, Administrative Law Judge Byrne wrote in a May 10 decision that the NC Court of Appeals frequently informs litigants and administrative law judges what substantial prejudice isn't, but thus far has not instructed all concerned what substantial prejudice specifically is in terms of what the agency would do or fail to do to make it exist. This lack of a definition can make it harder to win appeals, but even if an appeal is unsuccessful, it is possible to delay a competitor's projects for months or years. About a year after receiving initial approval for its RTP hospital, UNC Health filed plans to add another 34 beds to the facility, rising its projected cost to about $279.3 million. State regulators approved the application in September 2022. Duke Health in both 2021 and 2022 submitted its own proposals for the beds available in Durham County. In both years, Duke Health proposed adding the beds available, 40 in 2021 and 68 in 2022, to its existing Duke University Hospital. State regulators denied those proposals, leading Duke Health to file appeals. Both appeals, separately, went to the Office of Administrative Hearings. In December 2022, an administrative law judge affirmed the state's decision to approve UNC Health's initial application to develop 40 acute care beds at a new hospital in RTP. Duke Health in June 2023 took the dispute to the North Carolina Court of Appeals. In July, a judge sided with Duke Health's appeal on the second application for 34 beds, citing the lack of a public meeting. The DHHS and UNC Health have appealed that decision to the Court of Appeals, where both disputes are now pending. With these applications unsettled, UNC Health filed a third application for the project earlier this year to add another 38 beds to the facility, based on a need determination for Durham County in the 2024 State Medical Facilities Plan. This proposal, along with those previously approved for the facility, would increase the number of beds at the facility to 112 and its cost to about $371.3 million. UNC Health, which declines to comment as the process plays out, is also working on a longer timeline with this proposal. The health system, in its application, says it would complete construction of the hospital by November 2031 and begin offering services by 2032, rather than its initial projection of opening the facility in 2026. That timeline has been pushed out due to changes to the project, with the addition of more beds and delays from the appeal process. Wake Med may soon begin a similar process. Earlier this year, it received approval to move forward on a 121,000-square-foot patient tower at Wake Med North Hospital on Falls of the Neuse Road. The five-story tower would include 35 acute care beds and 15 observation beds. The health system also has received approval to add no more than 9 beds at Wake Med Cary Hospital for about $1.8 million. The response from competitors? In February, both Duke Health and UNC Health filed appeals, contesting both decisions. CON Law and Reform. North Carolina is one of 35 states with a Certificate of Need law intended to control health care costs by restricting the unnecessary duplication of medical facilities. But critics say the process restricts competition. This includes the Federal Trade Commission, Office of Policy Planning, and the Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice, which have previously weighed in on CON laws in various states. The agencies have been consistent over the years in advocating that states can improve competition in the provision of health care by repealing or curtailing their Certificate of Need laws, the agencies wrote in a 2019 letter to the Tennessee House of Representatives. North Carolina lawmakers approved the state's first CON law in 1971, only to repeal it a few years later after the state Supreme Court's decision found the statute unconstitutional. The court in January 1973 wrote that the law was, quote, a deprivation of liberty without due process of law and violation of the Constitution of North Carolina insofar as it denies Aston Park the right to construct and operate its proposed hospital except upon the issuance to it of a certificate of need, unquote. Following the ruling, the legislature rewrote the law, and it essentially has remained the same ever since, Huffstetler says. North Carolina's CON law received its first major reform in 2023. The change in regulations, which lawmakers tied to the expansion of Medicaid in North Carolina, removed psychiatric and chemical dependency treatment facilities from requiring a CON. These are facilities that do not usually lead to competitive bids, as the reimbursement rate for this type of care is so low that many providers are not interested in investing in these services, Huffstetler says. Two other big changes have not yet taken effect. Beginning in 2025, ambulatory surgical facilities in counties with more than 125,000 people will no longer require a CON. And in 2026, MRIs in larger urban counties will also be exempt from requiring a CON. These changes could come with their own challenges. For instance, Carter says the changes to the ambulatory surgical facilities could have workforce implications if patient volumes are spread across more facilities. This will be a challenge to a sector already facing worker shortages. With demographics working against being able to solve the workforce issues easily, I think this is a concern about permitting the proliferation of lower volume facilities and having to stretch staff across more facilities, Carter says. But for providers such as Emerge Ortho, these changes are welcome. We're thrilled and hopeful for the improvements to patient access, Farmer says. Emerge Ortho, which has clinics throughout the state, often has patients waiting days or weeks to receive an MRI, delaying when they can identify and solve their health issue. With this change, Emerge Ortho can expand its MRI offerings, Farmer says. Obviously, in orthopedics, people are hurting, people need to get back to work, and they need answers if they're going to be diagnosed for surgery, Farmer says. And advanced imaging often gives us those answers, so it will help expedite the patient care. Emerge Ortho has participated in the CON process for decades, typically engaged in two cycles a year. Participating in this process is costly, time-consuming, and can often involve hiring consultants and attorneys. For smaller practices, those can be difficult barriers to overcome, Farmer says. But that's only half the challenge, as appeals can create an additional burden and a longer timeline on launching the services. Unfortunately, it's the patient that loses on appeal delays, Farmer says, and each month that goes by is another month that there has not been patient care for that need as already defined by the state. Not only is the opportunity good, but the relief on application in the appeals process is a win as well. The editor's notebook this week is related to the cover story, so I'll read that one next. Sugata Mukherjee is the editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. I read with intense interest TBJ staff writer Zach Ezone's piece on the changing landscape of the Certificate of Need, CON, process to forward the healthcare needs of North Carolinians. Why do state healthcare regulators allow specific methods likely to be dilatory for North Carolinians to continue? Let me explain. Last year, after years of back and forth, state lawmakers made a few changes to the CON process as part of the broader HB 76 legislation dealing with Medicaid expansion. The CON changes centered on the threshold for diagnostic centers that was previously $1.5 million, but the reform raised it to $3 million. The reforms also raised the threshold for replacing equipment from $2 million to $3 million. So if one wants an expensive magnetic resonance imaging machine or to build a diagnostic center, DHHS has to greenlight the project. The agency has 90 to 150 days to review a CON application. These service expansions are hugely profitable for healthcare service providers, so when the state government states that a certain area needs a few more MRI machines or other diagnostic equipment because the population is surging, several healthcare service providers apply to offer those services. North Carolina regulators review the plans and then pick a winner. Remember, millions of dollars are at stake here, so losing to a competitor is no fun. As Ezone's story this week points out, people who lose their bid often file an appeal with state regulators who are required by law to review the plan again and determine if the process was done correctly. So the expansion of healthcare services, which is assumed to help North Carolinians, stalls, sometimes for years, before a final verdict. To appeal the project beyond the Office of Administrative Hearings, an organization must deposit another bond between $5,000 and $50,000. However, the applicant who received the CON approval can ask the court to set a higher bond of up to $300,000 to cover costs and damages. The CON law can vary significantly across states. In Georgia, for instance, filing an appeal requires only a $7,500 fee, but unlike in North Carolina, these appeals are heard by a CON panel rather than a quasi-judicial agency like the Office of Administrative Hearings. How is that beneficial to the broader society when we know the appeals process is being embarked on to prevent competitors from gaining market share or profitability? North Carolina allows applicants to appeal by putting up $50,000, chump change when you can make millions off additional MRI or other high-value machines. Here's a suggestion. Increase the fee to appeal to $500,000 or higher. States that have CON laws have different thresholds and fee structures for the appeals process. When the stakes are really high, the case often ends up in the courts, at which point the petitioner is expected to dole out even more money. To me, the whole CON approval process has morphed into a stall tactic that eventually jeopardizes the project's viability because of the time lapse. We can do better. Turning now to the reporter pages, the tech and startup section is written by Lauren Onosorge. Dogwood close to significant expansion. Just over 3 months after Dogwood State Bank signed its merger agreement with Community First Bank Corporation of South Carolina, the first acquisition in the Raleigh Bank's history, it's one regulator away from deal closure. Shareholders of Dogwood and Community First voted in May to approve the combination. That means the deal, which will create the ninth largest bank in North Carolina, is on track to close in the third quarter. Community First required a supermajority, 66.6% of shareholders, to approve the marriage. Dogwood CEO Steve Jones says the bank has also received all the necessary state approvals. It's just waiting on the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp's final stamp of approval, which it believes it will get in the coming weeks. When the deal closes, the banks plan to act quickly. They hope to convert the bank's systems in October. Jones says the outlook for Dogwood, which recently expanded to the Triad, is good despite the continued pressure of high interest rates. Just from an organic basis, our pipelines are good, he says. Obviously, in the markets we're in, there's a lot of good activity. The addition of $684 million asset Community First means instant growth for Dogwood. The five-year-old bank will grow from just under $1.5 billion in assets to more than $2.1 billion, with $1.8 billion in deposits and nearly $1.7 billion in loans. It also means an expanded geography, as Community First brings seven full-service financial centers in upstate South Carolina locales like Walhalla and Anderson, along with three in North Carolina and two in Tennessee. Community First also brings consumer banking to Dogwood, as when the deal was announced, 8.4% of the South Carolina firm's deposit mix was in consumer, compared to just 2% of Dogwood. Combined, the banks estimate that 4% of the loan composition will be in consumer banking. As of last June, Dogwood had more than $618 million in Raleigh metro deposits, just under 0.8% of the market, according to the FDIC. In Hyde County, groups sue to stop chemical treatments. A plan to use an experimental algaecide at a wildlife refuge in eastern North Carolina is at the center of a federal lawsuit. The Southern Environmental Law Center in Chapel Hill has sued on behalf of environmental groups Defenders of Wildlife and the Sierra Club. The lawsuit, filed in Raleigh, challenges the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's allowance of an experimental algaecide treatment at Lake Matamuskeet. The 50,000-acre refuge features North Carolina's largest natural freshwater lake. It also supports large numbers of wintering waterfowl. Aaron Carey, acting director of the North Carolina chapter of the Sierra Club, says the North Carolina Sierra Club is proud to stand between the delicate and irreplaceable beauty of Lake Matamuskeet and the casual disregard of corporate interest. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service declines to comment through a spokesperson. H&M offshoot acquires Triangle startup, plans R&D center. Armed with $100 million in new capital, an offshoot of apparel brand H&M has emerged from stealth mode by acquiring a Triangle startup that gives it an instant R&D footprint in North Carolina. Sire, that's S-Y-R-E, a sustainable venture that recently launched out of H&M and Swedish investment firm Vargas Holding, confirms that it has bought out UNC Chapel Hill's spin-out Premier Plastics, a move that establishes an eventual presence in Mebane. Premier co-founder Matthew Parrott estimates hiring between 15 and 20 people in the next year in North Carolina, and that expands massively as we move forward. Currently, it's a team of five working in Garner. The plan is to move the North Carolina operation to Mebane in the coming months, Parrott says. Primarily, it will be an R&D facility with a small pilot plant, according to Parrott, who is now R&D director at Sire. Premier wasn't the only company Sire considered, as it looked for technology to acquire to de-waste the textile industry. Parrott describes a lengthy due diligence process, one that involved Sire analyzing about 20 companies around the globe. Sire was looking for technologies that were scalable and commercial. He says they wanted potential companies to put together business plans, and we kept passing the bar the whole time. How IBM leans on Red Hat for open source. A new innovation out of IBM and Red Hat showcases how they are working to leverage each other's strengths. When IBM bought Raleigh's Red Hat 5 years ago, the open source community had questions. How would Red Hat stay Red Hat? How would the companies collaborate while keeping the separate existence executives were promising? Slowly but surely, opportunities for tagging each other in while retaining the boundaries are emerging. They include innovations IBM is developing to take advantage of the booming industry around artificial intelligence, such as InstructLab, dubbed a first-of-its-kind model alignment technique that will bring open-source community contributions into language learning models. It's the latest Big Blue Red Hat collaboration stemming from the $34 billion deal in 2019. and it shows cross-innovation is still happening between IBM and Red Hat, which IBM largely still treats as a separate unit. Zach Ezone writes the healthcare and higher ed section. Polarion raises $10 million to accelerate sales. A medical technology company in Durham is issuing shares to bring in additional capital. Polarion Imaging has raised $10 million as it ramps up commercialization of its drug-device combination product, XenoView, which the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved in late 2022. The company expects net proceeds from the placing to investors and direct subscription to be about $9 million. Polarion says it will use the funding to accelerate its commercial strategy, support research and development, and continue efforts to develop strategic partnerships. The funding will also be used for additional working capital and general corporate purposes, according to a statement from the company. Investors in the stock subscription include the companies Nukem Isotopes, GmbH, and Bracco Imaging, existing investors that own 10.4% and 7.6% respectively of Polarion's existing share capital. Nukem, an isotope supplier, subscribed for shares representing a $2.5 million investment, while Bracco, a diagnostic imaging provider, subscribed for an investment of $2 million. Polarion expects the need proceeds from this fundraise, plus its existing cash, would support operations into the first quarter of 2026. The company ended last year with a cash balance of $6.1 million. The company is focused on advancing its technology, XenoView, which the FDA in December 2022 approved for use with magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, for evaluation of lung ventilation in adults and pediatric patients aged 12 years and older. The product includes both a system, a piece of capital equipment, and a xenon gas blend that patients inhale prior to an MRI. After reporting less than $1 million in revenue in 2023, Polarion, which is listed on the London Stock Exchange, has set a commercial target of reaching between $2 million to $3 million in revenue in 2024. By 2028, Polarion is projecting revenue between $35 million to $40 million. Polarion, in June 2023, appointed Christopher Von Jaco as CEO following the retirement of former CEO Richard Houlihan. RTP firm secures stake in biotech. A biopharmaceutical company in Research Triangle Park has secured a stake in a new biotech through a recent licensing deal. G1 Therapeutics recently announced a global licensing agreement with Demos Biosciences, marking the second licensing deal the company has entered in recent weeks. Demos has secured the rights to develop, manufacture, and commercialize G1's asset lerociclib for certain radio predictive uses in the U.S., Europe, Japan, and other global markets. The deal excludes the Asia-Pacific region, where G1 has already licensed rights to lerociclib to a different company, Genor Biopharma. In exchange, G1 says it expects to receive shares of Demos' common stock, representing 10% of its outstanding equity capitalization, on a fully diluted basis. G1 has also secured a 20% royalty on aggregate annual net sales of the drug if it reaches regulatory approval and a commercial launch. Also in biotech news, biotech with presence in Durham inked significant deal with giant Eli Lilly. A biotechnology firm with operations in Durham is working on a major deal with Eli Lilly and Company, one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies. Actis Oncology has landed a strategic collaboration with Eli Lilly aimed at developing therapeutics for a range of solid tumors. The deal involves Actis utilizing its discovery platform to generate novel radiopharmaceuticals based on targets that Eli Lilly identifies. In return, Eli Lilly will make an equity investment in Actis and pay the biotech $60 million in cash up front, plus future milestone payments. In addition, Actis is eligible to receive up to $1.1 billion based on development and commercial milestones. The biotech would be also eligible for royalties. Actis is responsible for all discovery efforts and for first-in-human assessment for the programs that are moved forward, says Actis Chief Scientific Officer Paul Feldman. After that, the programs would transition to Eli Lilly, which would lead all clinical development and later commercialization of any therapeutics, following regulatory approval. It is a significant deal for Actis, which was founded by MPM Capital in 2020. The collaboration strengthens the biotech's capital position and, importantly, validates its approach to discovering novel radiopharmaceuticals. Feldman says the deal also supports the company's ability to do more of its core work. Discover more assets and treat more patients, Feldman says. We can expand our business to be able to do more. Feldman became the company's first official employee when he joined in early 2021. Prior to joining Actis, Feldman was the co-founder and CEO of Foundry Pharmaceuticals, which was acquired in 2015 by Intarsia Therapeutics. Ben Tobin writes a section on Greater Triangle Growth. In Person County, a giant warehouse on the market for $6 million. A warehouse totaling more than 130,000 square feet in a northern North Carolina county is on the market for sale or lease. Triangle area representatives of Toronto-based real estate company Avis & Young are marketing the 131,000 square foot warehouse at 2300 Old Durham Road in Roxboro, about 40 minutes north of Durham. Evan Sassaman, a senior vice president with Avis & Young, says the warehouse was formerly an aluminum manufacturing facility. The building is owned by Cary-based Roxboro Group, LLC, according to Person County deed records. Sassaman says the current owners have made major improvements to the facility, which was built in 1958, including replacing the whole roof and adding new sprinkler and fire suppression systems. The sellers are asking for around $6 million to buy the building, or $3.90 per square foot on a modified gross lease, according to Sassaman, who says the building has been on the market since the end of January. "I think that this site has a lot of potential," Sassaman says. "I think it would be an excellent candidate for a corporate relocation or expansion, especially if a company is looking to move to North Carolina. They might be able to get tax credits or economic incentives." Warehouse space in the Greater Triangle continues to perform well. Although warehouse vacancy for the region jumped to 5.9% in the first quarter from 4.8% the quarter prior, as lease-up of many of the newest warehouse properties is taking longer to stabilize. Sassaman also says Person County is full of other manufacturing businesses, pointing to the likes of food manufacturer Frito-Lay and auto manufacturer Eaton Corporation having operations in the area. The warehouse can house multiple tenants, Sassaman says. Located near the North Carolina-Virginia border, Roxboro's population stood at 8,212 as of July 2023, up from 8,125 in 2020. The population was 8,362 in 2010, according to the U.S. Census estimates. In Cumberland County, the county lures American titanium with incentives. The Cumberland County Board of Commissioners unanimously voted to approve an incentives package to attract Delaware-based American Titanium Metal. The project, which county leaders say is considering several different sites across multiple states, would include an $895 million investment to build a titanium reclamation facility. The company pledges to create 450 jobs, with the average salary being $120,000 and the lowest salary being $85,000. "This is a competitive project, but we have maintained and stayed in the hunt," Robert Van Kiens, chief executive officer of the Cumberland Economic Development Corporation, said to the board on May 20th. The project would be located on a 200-acre site off Bethune Drive, north of Fayetteville, near the Goodyear Tire Plant off Highway 401. Earlier this month, the Cumberland County Board of Commissioners voted to approve $1.3 billion in bond funding for the company to build a new plant. In Lee County, Florida outfit scoops up Sanford land. An LLC tied to Florida-based New Market Strategies, a real estate investment firm that has been active in the Triangle area, purchased a Sanford property at 1605 and 1611 Hawkins Avenue for $3.85 million, according to Lee County deed records. The site includes two buildings, one more than 32,000 square feet and the other 8,600 square feet. The seller is Charlotte-based Beacon Partners, which bought the facility from the Durham Coca-Cola Bottling Company in November of 2022 for around $3.35 million. In 2017, Durham Coca-Cola acquired Sanford Coca-Cola from the Coca-Cola Company. The real estate section is written by Kaylee Thompson. And downtown Raleigh, Moore Square Makeover now has a start date. The reimagining of Moore Square in Raleigh is moving forward with the goal of starting construction in September 2025. Properties to the east and south of Moore Square, including City Market, that the city has identified will be redeveloped into affordable housing, hotels, a grocery store, retail, and co-working space. Loden Development is the selected developer for the project. The project will be split into three phases, with the first phase tackling the affordable housing on the 16 parcels to the east of Moore Square. It will be 160 units in a 5-over-2 podium building. The apartment building is estimated to cost about $56.8 million, according to a presentation given by city staff to the Raleigh City Council on May 21. Funding for the apartments will come from low-income housing tax credits and gap financing from the city and Wake County. The developers are currently asking for $16 million in gap financing from the city. Harmony Housing Affordable Development will develop the affordable housing in partnership with Loden. Council voted unanimously to approve a ground lease with Harmony Housing for $10 a year. After 18 months, Harmony Housing will have the option to buy the land from the city. The lease will be for 1.16 acres at the corner of East Martin and South Bloodworth Streets. There will be 24 units offered at 30% of the area median income, 32 units at 50% area median income, 72 units at 60% of AMI, and 32 units at 80% of AMI. The second phase includes a hotel on the east site, and the third phase will wrap up the east site with a 22,000-square-foot grocery store and a 5,500-square-foot retail and dining space with a plaza. Raleigh Rescue Mission will also build a new building on the site. The south site, City Market, redevelopment will include a 150 to 160-room boutique hotel and 25,000 square feet of co-working space, audio recording production, and art studios. The apartment building in Phase 1 is expected to welcome residents in late 2027, with the hotel opening in fall of 2028. The remaining portion of the east site is targeted to open in 2029. Loden will move the Norwood House on the south side in September 2025, and has also agreed to redevelop Esso Station. Moore Square South was originally 9/10 of an acre, but three parcels at the corner of East Davie and Blake Streets were bought and added to the site, making it 1.15 acres. Northwest Cary heats up with more development. Residential development is pushing to the outer edges of Northwest Cary as the town runs out of room. A new zoning application filed with the town seeks to rezone four parcels, one of which would be annexed from Chatham County into Cary's jurisdiction, to allow for a residential project with townhomes and single-family homes. No developer is listed on the application, but Tucker Development, Inc. out of Sanford is listed on the annexation boundary survey documents associated with the application. Tucker Development, Inc. and the law firm listed on the application did not respond to inquiries. The proposed zoning is transitional residential and residential 8 with conditions to allow for 67 single-family homes and 25 townhouses. Durham rezones hundreds of acres for development despite concerns. New developments that would bring hundreds of residential units to Durham are moving forward after winning rezoning approval, but not without facing pushback. As the battle over whether land should be developed in southeast Durham continues, several residents spoke up May 20th in opposition to rezoning 200 acres between Highway 98 and Carpenter Pond Road. After much discussion, the Durham City Council voted 4-3 in favor of the rezoning, with council members Nate Baker, Chelsea Cook, and Didrina Freeman in opposition. The new zoning for the 10 parcels is planned development residential, allowing for up to 531 units. The previous zoning was rural residential. Home builder Taylor Morrison is the developer for the site, with a plan to provide a mix of single-family homes and townhomes. It is committing to offering 3% of the units to those making 80% of the area's median income for 20 years. The opposition mainly centered on whether the plan was the best use, considering it is inconsistent with the place type map. The council debated whether two types of housing with no non-residential uses was enough. Residents raised the same concerns that they have with other residential developments in this area of Durham: environmental impact, wildlife impact, the lack of emergency services, increased traffic congestion, and overloading the nearby schools. In Executive Voices this week, Zach Ezone spoke to FastMed CEO Jim Moffitt. After beginning his career on the payer side of healthcare, Jim Moffitt has spent his recent years leading different primary and urgent care organizations in Florida. Moffitt was previously the president of Holy Cross Medical Group, a division of Trinity Health in South Florida. He was also president and CEO of the Advent Health Medical Group. In these roles, Moffitt focused on building out integrated delivery networks that provide patients with access to high-quality care. Now he's aiming to do the same on a broader scale in North Carolina. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina in January completed its acquisition of FastMed and then named Moffitt as CEO of the urgent care provider with more than 50 clinics in North Carolina. FastMed opened its first clinic in Clayton in 2005 and built a network of more than 200 urgent care centers across Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, and Texas. But the company in early 2023 began selling off clinics in Texas and Arizona and sold to Blue Cross NC. Moffitt is focused on addressing short-term challenges like staffing shortages while pushing the organization in new directions. For instance, Moffitt sees FastMed adding primary care services to its clinics, most of which are in rural parts of the state. How did you begin your career? I started out with a consulting firm out of Dallas. We would go in and work with organizations to help them perform better operationally. One of my clients was Great American Insurance, and they hired me away to run a couple of their subsidiaries. Before I left there, I was head of operations for the parent company, Great American Financial. So I was kind of on the payer side for a decade before I moved on to the provider side. As I was wrapping up my time at Great American, my father contracted liver cancer, and so I got to experience as a caregiver firsthand just how broken healthcare was, how unintegrated it was, and how difficult it was to navigate. What interested you in FastMed? When I was approached about this opportunity by Blue Cross NC, I saw what they were endeavoring to do with FastMed, what I was endeavoring to do regionally, but they were looking to do it statewide, and the scope and impact of what that was really exciting. What really excited me was the idea of coming in and building primary care on top of the urgent care platform, building behavioral health on top of the urgent care platform, and building women's health, and doing it in areas where access to the services is really limited. We want to be that front door to affordable, high-quality care. I'm fueled every day by what my dad experienced 20 years ago. What was your transition from the payer side to the provider side like? We were working very hard as a provider to be able to provide high-quality, affordable care, and we needed the payers to partner with us to give us data and information that would allow us to understand whether or not we were having an impact on patient care and the cost of care to the patient. And so that was probably the biggest impression. The closer I got to the consumer, the more important I understood that partnership between provider and payer. What have the first few months been like? The first 3 months here has really been getting out into the clinics. The thing that's made the biggest impression on me is the passion and commitment to quality care that exists in the frontline teams. Obviously, we've experienced the same turnover challenges that all healthcare did, but the folks that are here have been here a while, and they're highly committed to high-quality care. What are the priorities? A big focus is understanding how we can be more accessible, more inconvenient for the consumer, and also provide the frontline teams with the skills and tools to be successful. My major focus is the point of care between how we engage our patients. How do we make that as effective, seamless, and convenient of an experience as possible? What would you like FastMed's role in healthcare to become? Today, we are an outstanding urgent care, occupational medicine organization, but I would say we're episodic care, and about 5% of our business is providing primary care. Part of our vision is to build our primary care everywhere it makes sense, particularly in those areas where there is not a lot of primary care access. We want to be able to have a primary care solution. I would like to see us have a model built by the end of this year. Right now it's in pilot mode, and we're learning a lot. By the end of next year, we hope to have expanded our pilot footprint, and by year 3, really rolling it out aggressively. What's driving that push? That was the vision of Blue Cross NC from the beginning. With the acquisition of FastMed, it was to expand health access to primary care, behavioral health, women's health, things that they were hearing communities needed. And in everything I've seen, that's been true. What will the model look like? In urgent care, you walk in and you're first come, first serve unless you have an acute need. Primary care patients tend to be more schedule-based, But again, we want to have the convenience of urgent care. So we want to strike a balance between scheduling follow-up visits, which are important for managing chronic disease, and having access to walk-in episodic needs. Let's turn to the big numbers this week. 8 million. That's how much HARP Bioherbicide Solutions, an agriculture technology company based in Research Triangle Park, is looking to raise in capital as it prepares for its first regulatory submissions. The company, though through the entity HARP Holdings, Inc., has so far raised $500,000 from a single investor, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. $1 million. That's the amount the city of New Bern paid per acre for 1.34 acres and three buildings to expand its electric operations. $19.81 million. That's how much two new industrial buildings sold for to real estate company Fox Field Investments of Boston. The buildings at 4101 and 4501 Waterfield Drive in Garner are fully leased. The quotables this week. The amenities of the new building, that's 1 North Hills, and the central location among all the great new restaurants and retail in the main district made this an ideal choice for us. That's Jeff Stocks, Executive Chairman, the Starboard Holding Companies. Another quotable. We see this as an opportunity to improve the site and building and put it back on the market for lease. It can be configured for multiple tenants or one large tenant. That's Jim Nucitelli, a representative of Revolve CRE, a Las Vegas-based real estate company, after spending $2.2 million on a warehouse and additional land in Lenoir County. People were asked which new RDU flight they're planning a trip for. 53% said Frankfurt, Germany, 12% said Mexico City, 10% said Panama City, Panama, and 25% said none. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.